Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you're joining us from. Welcome to today's webinar, Food Safety Management Systems. Are they equally applicable to all areas of the supply chain? My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team over here at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety, Inc. I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we're excited to be welcoming an industry expert as a guest for the presentation, Dr. Bijan Porkomalian. Now, I'm sure this is what you've all been waiting for. I'm very happy to introduce Dr. Bijan Porkomalian, the Global Director at McDonald's Corporation for Restaurant and Distribution Food Safety. He holds a degree in biochemistry, PhD in microbial physiology from Aberdeen University, and an MBA from Warwick University, and he is a visiting professor at Cranfield University. In 1994, he joined Unilever conducting research in S. aureus bacilli and managing the botulinum laboratory. In 1997, he moved to Leatherhead Food International as principal scientist, engaged in developing, training, and auditing food safety systems. He then moved to McDonald's Europe in January of 2000 as the food safety manager, overseeing food safety systems across the European supply chain from farm to front counter. Since 2015, his role has changed to Global Restaurant and Distribution Food Safety Director. Bijan is responsible for establishing, maintaining, and driving for continuous improvement in food safety standards and procedures. He's also on various advisory boards and committees with professional bodies and academia. So Bijan, thank you again so much for taking the time to join us, and we're very excited to have you.
Thank you very much, Amy. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I put the video on at the beginning just to make sure that you understand I'm real. This is not a recording, and I am who the picture is showing you to be. I'll switch off in a few minutes so to allow the bandwidth to continue. I will come back on if you want to see me and see me actually give an answer to you rather than recording, give an answer back. So first of all, let me thank the organizers, Paul, Amy, for allowing me to actually participate in this forum. It is always nice to be able to share what we have learned and to pass it on. In food safety, we don't have it as a competitive advantage, and the more we share, the better we can all be. Paul said that he wants to give me a lot of time, and that could be a mistake because I can just talk forever and never stop, and that could be a mistake. So I'm just going to watch the participation. Let's see. As soon as you start dropping one by one, I'll just stop speaking. So what is our management system? What is a food safety management system? And is it the same across the supply chain? Most of you said that it is completely different, and some of you said it's completely different. Most of you said it's basically the same. It is true because they all start from somewhere and people learn from each other and add on and add on and get it better. Some people believe that they have a perfect supply chain system and standards that go within it, but perfection I don't believe can be reached because after all it's done by human beings. And as human beings, we are not perfect. We think it is perfect because nothing's gone wrong. But if anybody knows anything about statistics, the longer you go with nothing being wrong, the more chance of it actually do go wrong. So we mustn't be complacent. And we have seen far too many examples of that in our industry where people are being complacent and something's gone seriously wrong. And unfortunately, there has been fatalities. And we don't want to see that. So we try to aspire to have a food safety management system that is as close to perfect as possible, but always knowing that there are opportunities that we can overcome, there are strengths we can build on, et cetera, et cetera. So today what I'm going to do is, first of all, explain to yourself about McDonald's, because you may not know who McDonald's is. And hopefully the actual will move on. Let me see if it works. One click on the button. Yes, it does. So the topics I will describe to you after a brief overview of McDonald's is about supply chain, a simplified way, and the challenges that we see in supply chain. Then go through how to maintain the integrity of supply chain and how to build on that through relationships, technical aspects, and leave you with some food for thought. As I go through these, as Amy said, please, please put your questions forward and we'll address them at the end. Or any questions that come to mind, we can address those at the end of it. McDonald's itself, and if you haven't been to a McDonald's restaurant, well, McDonald's is present in approximately 119 territories or 120, depending on when you count. And that is, if you consider we're about just over 200, we're around half of the world is where we are present. So the chances of you going to McDonald's is quite high. We are present in all these countries. However, we are actually working with approximately 2,000 food suppliers. We used to be a lot more than that, but we consolidate, we reduce to get more simplistic way of supply chain and hence be able to manage it better to be able to have a better and more efficient system. These suppliers actually provide food through around 200 distribution centers and hubs across the countries. Most countries have one distribution centers, but the larger ones have more. So for example, France and Germany, US, Canada, they have more than one simply because of the size of the country and the number of restaurants they have to support. But we also do have countries that do not have a distribution center because they are very small. And as a result, they get direct delivery either from a neighbor or direct into the restaurants from the suppliers. In these 200 deliver food to approximately 38,000 restaurants, which are in fact run by 1.9 million staff. If we consider myself as a corporation and the suppliers, we are a little bit over 2 million people working. Now, with the world at about 7 billion population, a third actually children and a third retired, that means you got about 2 billion people working every single day. Of that 2 billion, 2 million of them are actually working for McDonald's at one point or the other. So percentage-wise, quite a high percentage, you can think about it. So there is going to be a huge impact in the system globally if McDonald's suddenly stops tomorrow. So there's a lot to have on our shoulders, especially the fact that if these 1.9 million staff members, they don't follow procedure, the possibility of damage to the brand globally is quite high. All of these employees actually work in restaurants, which are not all owned by us. We do not own every single restaurant. In fact, we don't own any suppliers or any distribution center. Actually, let me correct that. We have one distribution center, and because we cannot get an external company to do that for us. However, in our restaurants, we are looking at approximately over 70% of the system being franchised. And that is the actual model that we work upon. It is much better to have an entrepreneur leading a restaurant environment and providing good quality food in a very good atmosphere. And all of these provide food on a daily basis, over 60 million people. Now, if you are into risk assessment or exposure, that's 6 million exposure rates per day. Now, we are 365 days, and you just multiply that up, and you can consider what sigma factor you're looking at to ensure safety of products. So that's what McDonald's is all about at the moment, and what we are trying to manage. Now, if we look at a supply chain, a typical supply chain, it is quite complex. Can we go back, please, Amy? If we go back one slide, there we are. This is just an example of it. Oh, no, the supply chain. That's the one. A supply chain. So, you got manufacturing, you got the suppliers, the plants, the warehouses, courier services, retail, and of course, customers. It's all over the place. And of course, it's not just one directional. We can get it to go back because you got recycling going on. You got taking products back and redistributing. It's all over the place. But this makes life very, very complex and makes managing supply chains very difficult. And to have one that fits this and another one that fits something a bit more different is going to be quite difficult. So what we try to do is simplify the supply chain. So basically, we want to have at the farm level, the field, give it to the processor, process gives it to the distribution haulage system and to restaurants. And in some cases, it goes back again if you are recycling. Of course, there is a little bit back and forth as well, but this is the target to make it as simple as this, and you have full traceability going through this. However, there is a problem that faces all of us when we try to do this, and that is that the world is not so simple. The world is full of people of different ages and cultures and different ways of getting across them, and the way we manage one country will be different from another. And we are no longer in a local market, we're in a global market. One of our ex-CEOs, may he rest in peace, he actually said we are global because we are global by trying to act local. And to do that, you must fully understand the culture of the markets one is dealing in and one is importing or exporting to. Now, all of this you may say right now, what's that got to do with the supply chain and is it the same standards or on? Well, if you've been working in a global market, you know that we have countries with different standards. We have different food standards. We have different microbiological specifications. We have different chemical thresholds. We have different ways of accepting product, different ways of contracts. And so they're all very different, and they are based on history, they're based on the age of that industry, as well as the age of the people working within it, because they work differently. And that brings us to the next slide of the actual generations that we are dealing with. We have, in our simple life, we have three generations. The first one is Generation X, which is myself. And we are about 41 million, a bit up or down from that. We're exposed to daycare, divorce, what's in it for me attitude, highly educated, higher level of precaution and pragmatism. And we're concerned over broken homes and finance. This is what we actually grew up with and concerns that we had. And then we are supposed to deal with the next generation, which is actually the millennials, Generation Y. Born between mid-80s and 2000s, there's a lot more of them, 71 million of them, very sophisticated, technology-wise, sale immune, racial, ethnically diverse and segmented, less brand loyal, and they actually have their style conscious, and they're more involved with the family affairs and the buying and selling. And then we have the other group, which is upcoming right now, which is Generation Z. Now, these are born in the early 20s, so now they're about becoming 21, 20s, and 19, 18, late teenagers. These we do not know much about because they're just starting to show what they can and what they want. But we do know that they live in a world which is more diverse than the last two generations. It's higher level technology, much, much higher, customization and diagnostic approach, and everything's accelerated. We are providing them with everything at the tip of a button, and you give it to them within 1 millionth of a second, they have 1,000 to 1 million different answers. When I was growing up, when I went to school, I had to go and read up on books, go to a library, try and find things. It would take me weeks to find something that takes approximately 1 minute today. So they're much, much faster. We're providing them with something that is so fast that it's hard for us to keep up. Now you think about a Generation Z, every single minute of the day, they've been given things very, very quickly. And they go off through their life, school, college, university, they come out and they go to work and they're expecting the same speed that they're gonna progress, but suddenly they feel like they're in syrup. It's like, no, 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 you cannot make CEO in 2 years. It's gonna take you 25, 30 years. And they are shocked, why so slow? Why can't I do it? Why are you telling me I cannot do it? So the actual way we are raising them is becoming a problem for us in the future because Generation X and Y and Z have been brought up differently. This creates a problem when you're trying to have a supply chain which has got the three generations across the chain at the manufacturing side, an old family business who's been going on for years and years, and you have a lot of experience from a Gen X's, but you got a lot of new people at Gen Z's trying to actually run the factory, for example, or the retail or somewhere down the line, and trying to link them together is gonna be very difficult. So challenges arise depending on how the supply chain is actually brought together. When we move forward and analyze this generation, we think, well, what is it that we must actually do when we're trying to pave the road ahead? Because it is in some ways an unknown, of that next generation, because we have to understand, is it the technical part that we have to address, or is it the actual relationships that we need to build to actually have a unified supply chain management system that we can take from others? So for example, can I take a bespoke system from some other supply chain? If I can, then that is great, but I have to look at who is working within my supply chain to be able to mimic the one I'm looking at. But before we go ahead, I think we have a polling question here.
That is correct. We do have another polling question for you all here. As before, just choose whichever response suits your mindset best. And that question is, what do you think is the most important aspect for a successful supply chain program? All responses to the polls are anonymous, like I said before. And just a reminder that if you have any questions throughout Bijan's part of the presentation, go ahead and type those into the questions tab, and we will respond to as many of the questions as we can once we hit the end of these slides. All right, once again, we're getting some great participation in here, and thank you so much for promptly answering the poll. I'm gonna go ahead and close that out for now. And this is how everyone voted. It looks like overwhelmingly the thought is that having a strong food safety culture is the most important aspect of a successful program. And Bijan, I will hand it back to you.
Thank you very much. That is actually very, very nice to see that most of us agree, because what we look as our culture is what defines us. And I'll explain that in a few minutes. And those of you who've been around long enough or been looking around food safety culture, you probably heard it first time around when Frank Yannis spoke about it years ago, and it started picking up in GFSI and move forward. And in every part of our life, we see food safety culture. But maybe I want to be a bit of a disruptor here and say that I don't think food safety culture exists. Now, before you panic and switch off and leave, let me explain why I say that. I think we all have a culture. We live within that culture. We apply our culture to food safety. There is no specific food safety culture, as there is no specific driving culture. It is a person's culture that is reflected on the way they actually adhere to food safety practices, or the way they drive, the way they dress. But in order to be able to compartmentalize, to be able to focus, we do use words in different ways. And food safety culture as a statement has been able to provide fantastic leverage in providing communication skills being explored to actually give people the understanding what is food safety and how is it fed by culture. So the words itself may show you something, but it may mean another thing. But what's important is that culture is and will always be a significant factor in food safety, as in everything else. So if we look at supply chain, how to maintain the integrity of it, is it the actual culture or is it the actual standards, etc.? Well, I believe there's two things. There's the hardware and there's what's called the software. I'll come to software in a second. The hardware I like to talk to about is about the actual approval procedures, the training, the hygiene, the HACCP, the audits, something that we all do in supply chain. So these are the ones that you can actually take from somebody else and do exactly the same, directly copy it. How would I have an approval process for a supplier? How can I have an approval procedure for a product, a quality system, or a food safety from a microbiological specification point of view? What training tools do I need to have? How do I train people? How often do I train them? To what level do I train them? And how do I get back information that the training was correct? HACCP programs we all know about. And of course, how do we audit? So how do we verify the process is working? These are the hardware, and we can actually pick that up from somebody else quite easily and actually copy it. It can be from the authorities. It can be from another organization. It can be from a textbook. You can actually get this from universities, actually how is best done. You can get university professors to provide you with evidence on what is the best way to train people in order to have them do exactly the right things the right way. And some say it's not training, it's about education. So education, training, which one actually fits where? I think both do. You educate and then you train against that educated tool. But then you also have the software. Now, the software is a lot more difficult to manage, and it's very difficult to actually pick from somebody else because it is very much to do with your culture. It is about your history, your attitude, the responsibilities one holds, accountabilities, and naturally our ethics around something. So all in all, it's our culture. And you cannot just copy a culture across. It's just like saying having democracy put into a play in a into a country. You cannot do that. It takes time, it takes effort to build on it. Culture is the same. We actually learn from those we admire and we follow them and we actually build our culture. Most of us, our culture is based on what we see in our parents or our relatives or a hero that we believe in. Most children, their heroes are football stars or their movie stars, and they actually try to mimic them and follow them. And our culture is built on those. And as we go forward, we start fine-tuning that culture to see what is successful. So if we see someone who's successful, we adapt their culture to be successful too. So to have a supply chain system and the standards to go all the way through, those are the hardware. We can have them. We can have the same specification for the same products, but to actually manage it, the way we do it is very much culturally linked. Now, when we look at these two aspects, they're actually quite different in the way they work. Our hardware is like the wall of China. It is solid, it is there. It is there to protect against any harm from either side. And it needs to be there. And it is always standing there, very nicely guarding us. However, software is like water and ripples in water. It's very soft, it's very much changes into shape it wants, but when actually one hits the other, it is impossible to stop it. It's impossible to change it. It's very difficult to manage that water and the ripple that it works through. However, culture is very fluid, and if you get it under enough right conditions, it will go right through the hardware, the China wall, as if it's hot knife through butter. It will not stand the pressure that will come under. So your hardware, although it is there, it looks solid, it looks very secure, your software is not really soft. It is the one that actually can make the biggest difference and vital to the survival or improvement of a system. Now, if we look at go next and see the technical aspects, the things that we can pick up and go through, it's very simple. In our supply chain, we go farm, field, primary supplier, secondary supplier, distribution center, restaurants, and consumers. But these on their own are not very good. They need to have a chain which are stuck together. And simplification saying they all go one in one together. But each one of these links is important because they actually form the biggest part of the supply chain. They are like a cable. They are stronger because of the things in them. So we have approvals, we have specifications, we have validation processes, as we have verification to on validations. Then we have sharing best practices, we have traceability systems, and of course we have crisis management as another one, and innovation. All these together form our food safety management program, but they can become very strong because of that cable unit. As many of you would know, like the one piece of twig you can break, but you put 10 of them together, it's much more difficult to break. Now, in order to have a very strong supply chain, we learn from others and we can pick from others on how strong can we make the link between the different stages of the supply chain. And we can pick that up and learn from others. And that is where we see commonality from one to the next. And this can, of course, become even more stronger because when we look at each building block, they have within them different standards also that we can pick from a technical point of view. We can take from that training programs. We can take from it, for example, water management at the farm field, irrigation water, for example. And this is not just from the one part, but every single one of them have the same. And from each one, you could pick something else. So from farm field, you can say, well, let's look at the risk management processes that's there. Let's look at from a primary supplier, the actual traceability systems that they have, one up, one down, or all the way forward, all the way backwards. The secondary supplier, can be looking across and saying the supply quality management system that we have. This is what we have in McDonald's ourselves, supply quality management systems. And a distribution center, what can we do there? Well, something we are doing right now is try to have automated product temperature monitoring system during transport, not air, but the actual product temperature, so we can maintain the integrity of the product throughout the whole chain. At a restaurant level, what can we do? Well, at a restaurant level, we can automate our HACCP systems. Why not? And, you know, why take away the paper and pen? I'm sure you saw at the GFSI conference, not last year, but the year before, last year and the year before that. And as we move through, we see more and more of this happening as we go into a digital world. And we can learn from these as well. And of course, at the consumer level, they really want to understand about allergen information. Different countries approach this differently. If you go to Europe and Scandinavia, it's very, very important to have allergen management programs in place. In the US, it's not as high up on the agenda as it is in Europe, but it's picking up in other countries and other regions. Asia is picking up on it. Legislation is changing now, as it is in many other countries. Canada recently also moved further on allergen management, allergen information provision as well. All of these are the technical parts, but in McDonald's, how do we do that? Now, we're talking about that you have to have the same standards or not. Well, when we look at the whole supply chain again, in our case, we got a farm field, we got the salt and deboning plant, for example, for beef, patty forming place, logistics, and of course, restaurant. Now, in all of these, we have to have system management standards. Some of them are legal, some are not. For example, we have to have traceability, sugar toxin producing E. coli control, animal welfare management programs. We need to have at the slaughterhouse the same traceabilities, GMP, HACCP, specific risk material control. We need to have, again, GMP, HACCP, and traceability at the secondary processor, as well as raw material control, rework policies, logistics parts. Again, we need to have similarities there, good warehousing practices, good distribution practices. And of course, at restaurants, again, good catering practices has a traceability. As you notice, there are some commonalities right away across because you cannot have no traceability throughout the chain. But there are similarities and they go through. Good agricultural practices, good manufacturing practices, good warehouse and distribution practices, and good catering practices. So the good practices, depending on your area, they're almost identical. They just change slightly depending on the environment they're looking at. And they all have a HACCP program that can be associated to all of them. HACCP can be applied to a farm, to a slaughterhouse, to a processor, anything. HACCP is a management tool for food safety. So you can apply it in different ways. So you can have similar standards right across the supply chain and it works very well. In fact, it works very smoothly when you have the same standard right across the chain. But on top of this, you need to also have a compliance measurement for these standards. It's no good point just to have the standards. You need to be able to measure them and be able to actually understand how performance is being measured and moving forward with these. For example, at the farm field, we have to have the McDonald's Global Good Agricultural Practices, which is not dissimilar to Global GAP or any other standard that's there. It's just that it has some extra points or differences because to fine tune it to what we see in our system, as you would do too. We also have audits by independent auditing firms looking into the standards and if that system management standard is actually in place or not. Are there routes for improvement? So the results will show us how to can do a SWOT analysis to identify where we can improve ourselves. Similarly, we have a supply quality management system audit. Our standard that we have here is not dissimilar to GFSI standard. In fact, it's a GFSI standard plus some more because it is not just a food safety standard. It is a quality management system. As a result, it requires of a few more things, the points that are in ISO 9002, for example. At the distribution centers, we have the distribution quality management program, which is exactly like the supplier one, but targeted towards logistics. Again, it has incorporated within it the GFSI benchmark scheme standards so that you do not do two audits, for example. You just do this audit and then a little bit more if you have to fulfill the McDonald's standard. And at the restaurants, we have restaurant operations improvement programs, which has within it internal audits. We have external audits by independent auditing firms. And in some countries, we do have microbiological sampling programs for hygiene testing. Not pathogen testing, it is for hygiene. So for example, doing total coliforms or total plate counts for surfaces, etc., to see if the cleaning process was actually adequate or not. This is not a mandated program. It's actually some markets do, some markets do not have it. All of this needs to be fine-tuned and get better, and looking across others to learn from others. And as I said earlier, we have to use university researchers to get information, so academia. We use medical consultants to help us out. We have risk assessment groups. We have supplier councils. We actually link in with GFSI and ILC, European Food Safety Authority, as well as other organizations to learn and to understand that we can, how we can move forward. We are under no impression that we know everything, because we do not. We actually, we know quite a lot because we talk with people. We have a wide variety and of suppliers who are their best at their game, at the game. So we actually talk with them. We learn from them. They learn from us. We share everything. As a result, you improve the technical part of the whole system. But then we come onto the soft part, as I was speaking with you earlier, to finalize that last part to make it stronger. The relationship in McDonald's began over 65 years ago with a handshake and not a contract. And some of our suppliers, even today, there is no contract. It's still a handshake. And we work on that. We actually try to express our people values and build on the partnership with everybody. We are working together. We can actually align our expectations, making sure that nobody is left out and not understanding what is expected from one and the other. We eventually become friends because we trust each other and we all work together for a common goal. The whole idea is to actually have a good quality, safe product that the customer actually wants. And if that's the case, you're meeting the demand of the customer, we all win. It's a win-win situation. But we must understand that the customer is not the customer and us. We are the customer. I eat at McDonald's. The suppliers eat at McDonald's. We are the customers. So it's not us and them. It's all of us. All of this works in something we call the three-legged stool. If you imagine on top of the stool sits the Big Mac, in order that Big Mac to be sitting there pretty, we need to have our franchisees, our suppliers, and ourselves at the corporate to all have the same strength, work together in unison to be able to actually fulfill the goal that we want. And that is to make sure the customer actually is satisfied with what they're getting. To finish it off, some food for thought would be, let us consider what we have just been talking about. First and foremost, we all know that food safety is a priority number one. Without food safety in place, there is no food business. So it's very, very simple. It's the green fees. But don't forget that a lot of people seem to think food safety is a given. And the question that was raised years ago at a GFSI conference, but at the time, Patrick Wall, who was the European Food Safety Authority head of food safety, said, well, who gave it? There's never a food safety person at the board table. Very rarely do you see somebody there. And this is a problem sometimes people face, is that food safety is forgotten because it's so well looked after. And it does. They think about, it's all looked after, we got good people doing it, but needs to be paid a lot of attention to make sure it doesn't fall apart. Next, we'll talk about the history. History does matter because history forms the foundation of a company's culture, and it builds on that. If that history is strong, then the foundation is strong, then the culture is strong, and therefore you will actually move forward faster because everything is quite easily acceptable. We must also understand the supply chain relies on its hardware and software. It's not just about the cultural part or the ethics part. It's all about, at the beginning, to have the foundations put into place. The hardware needs to be in place, the approval procedures, the standards, right across the supply chain to have harmony across the way, and you do not get some mistakes along the way. Good product in can be maintained good, but if you get rubbish in, you get rubbish out. You cannot improve on it. So you have to start looking from the beginning of the chain, right at the farm level, at the field level. You need to also maintain the same standards throughout the supply chain, as I said. You cannot allow yourself to be relaxed and then allowed to drop. The silver bullet at the end of the chain does not exist. And if it did exist, there would be so high a risk associated with it that you probably wouldn't want to do that, because the sampling program you need to have in place to give you confidence will be so high that you probably will be eating all of the product before you even sell it, and you will not be actually giving anything out because you're not sure if it's safe for the consumer or not. In fact, you'll probably be putting it all through a test. 100% sampling gives you 100% confidence, but then you have no product. So you try to actually maintain the same standards, high standards, right across the supply chain, right from the beginning. Everyone has a role in food safety. So you must make sure that we trust each other, allow people to have the knowledge to move forward, to be empowered, to stop the line, to actually stop any production from going forward when they see something wrong. Allow them to speak up, because then they will catch things that others may not. Must always listen to each other. Doesn't mean that we have to accept what we say, but at least listen to each other, see what happens. We must also remember that no company is best at everything. Everybody can do better. There's always somewhere where you can learn something more. So every company has to think about that. The cultural differences that we see are always a strength, and they're not a weakness, because you can learn from each other's culture and build on it, not walk away from it. And of course, when we look for opportunities, these opportunities can help us overcome the challenges through innovation. Always looking forward for innovation, not necessarily invention, but innovation. And there we can move the supply chain to a higher standard, higher level, and allow others to learn and share as well. And there's one point there on about leadership. Leadership is not about being the first one. It's about being the one who's trusted to be followed. If you look at the animal kingdom, the leader actually is not in wolves, for example. The leader is not in the front. The leader is somewhere in the middle, making sure he can see the front and the back. The actual weakest are more to the front because they will set the pace, whereas the strongest are at the back, making sure everyone's protected. If you look at any kind of organization, you see that leadership is all about the one who you trust to make sure you're all doing the right thing in the right way. With that, I would like to say that we all can achieve everything together. Food safety comes from the heart, and if you trust in your heart, you will always achieve it. It has always, food safety has to be first, it has to be always, and it has to be everywhere. Our founder, Ray Kroc, said this, and I think it's absolutely true, because it shows to being together, because none of us is as good as all of us. Thank you very much for listening, and next polling question.
Great, thank you so much for that presentation, Bijan. We do have a quick polling question, and I just wanted to mention a few of our upcoming webinars, and then we'll go right into the Q&A. And that last polling question just has to do with what other webinar topics you might like to see in future presentations. You can choose as many or as few of these options as you'd like, and this just gives us an idea of what we can add to the schedule in the future. We do have a full schedule coming up through June, full of webinars on various topics. Just a sampling of the next three coming up, we have this coming Thursday, we have Enterprise Risk Management, Effectively Communicating Risks from the Shop Floor to the Boardroom During Product Crisis. In 2 weeks, we will be having Artificial Intelligence and Digital AI, a focus on traceability and ethically sourced foods. And then we also, in 2 weeks, have How Do You Manage Your Documentation? So, like I said, a variety of topics with multiple guest speakers coming up. All of our webinars are completely free to register. So go ahead and visit our website at pgrfsi.com/webinars, and you can sign up for as many as you'd like. And now I'm going to go ahead and open up the questions tab and see what kind of questions you all have sent in throughout this presentation. All right, let's see. All right, and this first one I'm gonna send over to Paul. This question is from Iman, and I recognize that name from one of last week's webinars. Welcome back. Thank you for attending another webinar with us, Iman. Iman is wondering where or how to get a certified FSMA certificate. Any advice, Paul? Paul, I think you might be muted if you're trying to respond.
Sorry about that, Amy. Yes, Mon, thank you very much for the question. We absolutely do FSMA certification and audits for you, so you can feel free just to reach out to me afterwards and I'd be more than happy to help you.
Perfect. Let me see here. Some questions for Bijan. All right. Ooh, this is a good one. I like this one. Supply chain technology is constantly evolving. What do you think affects McDonald's supply chain the most?
What affects supply chain of McDonald's the most? I think digitalization would affect it most, not in a negative way, in a very much a positive way. Looking at what we can actually get all of our systems to be involved in to make it much more efficient, more transparent, and more real time to be able to manage the system. I think that's going to have the biggest impact as we move forward. I think digitalization.
Digitalization, yeah. As a follow-up to that, what in the past, 5 to 10 years do you think has been the most impactful development in the industry for McDonald's?
I think consumer awareness has been the biggest impact, and consumer voice of what they want. And listening to the consumer has been very challenging because, for one thing, that people say a lot of things. It doesn't mean that they actually do want it, they actually say it. But to be able to understand truly what is it that the consumer actually wants from us, and to be able to respond in a most positive way that they actually get what they've asked for, is quite challenging. And that's been making a lot of changes with the way we are operating our restaurants, with the way we're actually providing different products in different markets.
Yeah, and in that same vein of thought, I'm just thinking social media, I'm sure, has been hugely impactful. Is it? It's everywhere nowadays. Nobody isn't on social media, I feel, in some way or another.
Absolutely.
All right, let's see. We have a question here from Juan Carlos, another name I recognize from previous webinars. Thank you for joining us again, Juan Carlos. Juan Carlos asks, how do you encourage so many franchisees and restaurant employees to follow food safety standards and procedures?
Well, it is all about building on the culture again and try to explain that, number one, every single one of them is responsible for the survival of the company globally. So that's number one. Number two is that one of the points I put forward, that it's not about us and the customer. We're all customers. So if we do not follow the food safety standards, we are going to be hurting ourselves, our family members. So it's not about, I don't see it happening. It's going to happen to me too. But food safety has traditionally been very boring, get a spreadsheet, fill out the points and so on, and time consuming. So moving forward, making things digital, making it more today, making it more 21st century, and real and actually simple and quick and more reliable, has been able to provide us with a bit more of a positive way to look at food safety and adhering to it.
Great. We have another question here. In general, what do you think is the most vulnerable link in the supply chain where issues could occur?
It's a very good question.
It's a very broad question too. Yes.
Yeah. There is no one single point where you can say the chain here is the weakest, and it's very much depending on the product we're talking about and the market and the people, because they're also variable. In some markets, the supply chain from the supplier all the way to the back of the restaurant door is very, very secure. But when it gets to a restaurant level, it becomes very weak because the people working in a restaurant are a lot less trained and educated than the ones before them. So that becomes an issue there. In other markets, the farmer and the supplier are not so well developed. And so therefore, they are the weakest link. So we need to actually bring more knowledge and education there. So it depends. It depends market to market, product to product.
All right, great. We've got a question here. What is the cadence for audits for McDonald's? Are they yearly or more frequent?
Again, it depends. So depending on the food, the supplier, the actual process that we are going to have in the market. It can be minimum one a year, it can be more, but it's also a risk-based approach, how many you got to do. So if you got a beef supplier, they would have one audit minimum per year, and usually it's GFSI these days, but it can become more than that depending on the market, the needs, and the risks that we may see. So it varies, but minimum one a year we do have in our food suppliers.
All right, fantastic. We've got a question here about training. With regards to training, what do you find is the best way to deliver training, and how do you validate knowledge retention?
Sure. So if you talk about the restaurant parts, it is cascaded down in different ways. So as you join the restaurant, you go through different levels of training because of the job you do. So you get trained on the job, but as you get further on, you have external training programs for food safety, and that is tracked because it's certified. Within a country, they actually know who's gone through which training, because that training allows them to progress through their career. If you do not go through this training, you will not go to the next level. So it is inherently going through this way. That's the way we kind of track it and make sure that people have gone through the right training. The way to deliver it is quite complex, because if you look at restaurants, the high turnover of staff is amazingly high. So to be able to give their training and not waste time, it has to be almost intuitive. It has to be one-on-one. It can also be done by webinars. It can be done by classroom style. So again, it depends on the market. It's done in a different fashion.
All right, excellent. I think we'll probably have time for two more questions. We've got a question here regarding food allergies. How has the changes in the prevalence of food allergies affected your handling of food allergies in your restaurants?
So again, depending on the market and the level of requirements set by the consumer and the government, there are different ways of approaches. So for example, if you go to some of the markets, you would notice that the tongues that are used to take fish or chicken or beef are different colors. So to define that, the blue is for the fish, so you don't confuse it with that one. But you must also notice that in a restaurant environment, it is impossible to actually separate out allergen transfer from one to another. So we do our best to actually tell everybody what the ingredients are, and the fact that we do our best not to do cross transfer. But there is always a possibility. So we cannot say we are allergen free, for example. It's just not possible. It is practically not able to do that. But we do the best we can not to fry in a chicken vat, not to fry fish in it, for example. We don't do that. So that way we try to limit or minimize the risk of transfer.
All right, great. One last question here, and I think this should be a quick one. This one is coming from Muhammad, and he also offers his compliments on a very informative and fantastic webinar. So he says, thank you. His question has to do with auditing on behalf of McDonald's. Does McDonald's allow independent food safety auditors, or only through certification bodies?
We go through independent ones too. However, it all depends on whoever wants to audit, are they able to meet the requirements of the standards that we have? We actually don't have any distinction between saying, should it be, for example, this auditing firm or that auditing firm? It's like, if you can meet the requirements of having the right education, right training, right process, right qualifications to do the audit, and then you can do it. But it goes through a pretty tough selection process, because we don't just select them and say to our suppliers, here is someone to audit you. The suppliers come to us and say, I would like to use this company, and they come to us, and then we do shadow audits, etc., to go through the approval process.
All right, great. I think we'll end the questions there. If your question wasn't answered, or if you think of something else offline once the webinar has ended, I do absolutely encourage everyone who has other questions to send them over to us here at PJRFSI, and we can forward them along as necessary. You can get us at PJRFSI at PJRFSI.com. pretty simple. Or if you go to our website, there are a variety of other ways to contact us, including our phone number and other methods of communication. Bijan, thank you so much for such a great presentation. We're so happy to have you on. Any parting words of wisdom for the audience before we wrap things up?
I would say that keep your eyes and ears wide open, listen to everybody, take it on board. Do not get upset if somebody criticizes you. Just accept it and learn from it. You can do it or not do it, it's up to you. But learn from it. There's so much to learn from so much around you, and you can get faster, further.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for attending. To all of our attendees, we hope to see you on a future webinar. And on behalf of PGRFSI, I just want to wish everyone a happy and safe rest of the week, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.